listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from Nick's Place, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Out at Nick's Place for our listener Christmas party, 2713 Rocky Ridge. A lot of familiar faces here. Thanks for coming on out. So plenty of time. We'll be here out till 7 for our ESPN listener Christmas party. We gave away the Earl Campbell Houston Oilers jersey. Scott McGrath was the winner of that contest. Nobody could touch under 212. Nobody could even come close. They were trembling in their boots, even with the idea of trying to get under 212. But Scott, the gentleman that he is, giving the jersey over to Burton, the young man who gave the valiant effort earlier.
In the spirit of Christmas.
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 Martin's dad, frame it for him. Or make him wear it. Let him wear it. That's fine.
What would you do with an Earl Campbell jersey? Would you frame it?
If it was signed, probably frame it, but
does
not
the sign,
signed.
Does the autograph like make the difference there?
Well, because he had the certificate of authenticity, I would probably make sure that it stays as pristine as possible.
Yeah.
But if that wasn't there and it was signed, I'd probably wear it.
So this is the second spot of the ESPN listener Christmas party. We started off with the bench over at Klein's Jewelry earlier this morning.
Correct.
I saw some of the videos. I saw some of the Instagrams. I saw some of the tweets. I saw the onside sneak, which was hilarious. I saw the eggnog challenge, which was awesome. I saw the little combine drill where you're running around the cones. You're grabbing a beer. You're chugging it. You're sprinting. I saw all of that. Describe the scene for us a little bit over at Klein's Fine Jewelry earlier this morning.
A lot of giveaways. And shout out to Mark Klein for putting up all that stuff. We had gift cards. Lance actually made an appearance.
He did.
Drove up and just dropped off some stuff for Gilbert. I guess it was a NFL Network quarter zip and some like a frame or whatever.
You made it sound like he drove by and like just stuck his hand out of his car.
I mean, he kind
of
did do that.
It.
Yeah.
Really?
He pulled up. He stopped.
Did he get out of his car?
And I saw – no. He was wearing his mask. He's not sick, but
– I got you.
Yeah.
Being safe.
Yeah, just being safe. Didn't want to – risk anything, and he pulls up, and I saw him on the. He's on the other side of all the cars. He pulls up, and I was like, "That's Lance."
And
he's like,
"No,
no, no." He's like, "No, no, 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 no." And then he just dropped the academy bag with all the stuff down on the ground, and then drove off.
Did he speed off? Like, did he?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, yeah. I don't think he wanted anybody to know that he was there.
Oh, that's funny. Rockets losing last night, PC, in the first game that Jalen Green returns after the hamstring injury that cost him a good amount of games. They lose by a dozen to the Pacers on the road. Like, I'm at the point where the Rockets losing is actually a good thing to me because I want the Rockets to have another top four pick in this year's NBA draft because they're still pieces away before being a true, real contender. But it was nice to see Jalen Green get back on the floor. Like, he is your best piece in terms of, like, who has the highest ceiling on this team. Only played 25 minutes. And any time Jalen Green hits 6 of 9 of his three-pointers, it's going to seem like he played really well. But I like the fact that he looked like he was just another guy on the offense. He wasn't turning the ball over. We were wondering how he's going to look coming back off the injury after watching the Rockets play better basketball, quite frankly, without him than with him. And it seemed like he kind of had the idea of that. He looked pretty good yesterday in the loss.
And played in a different role than what he had been before. And you heard Coach Silas say after the game, he was hitting his catch-and-shoot threes and that he wasn't dribble, dribble, dribble. They kind of took the ball out of his hands a lot and would look to have him rotate, move without the ball, get a spot, and then be there for a kick out for a three. And Jalen Green responding 6 of 9 from downtown, 20 points in 25 minutes. And obviously that's not going to be his long-term role. But if this is what gets him acclimated back to the team, as he was going to be on a minutes limit, and Silas said, well, you know, we played him a few more minutes than we really wanted to. So, for whatever their reasons are, obviously they're trying to be cautious with him as he works his way back from injury. If he's able to shoot and they don't have to rely on him so much to handle the ball and as he's reacclimating in the offense, you're still developing the kid. He's still part of the group. And I'm with you. Even though they're, what, like 3 games out of a playoff spot?
Yeah,
I don't want
spot.
Them in the playoffs. I want them in the lottery. I want them very high in the lottery. I want them to get that second, you know, another top four pick. So they've got, you know, Jalen Green and then another, you know, projected superstar to build around. Let's remember, Jalen Green's 19 years old. So the idea of, oh, well, they're playing better without him, he's garbage. That's an idiot take. And I'm not saying
well, they are.
Took that, but there are people who are like, oh, well, they're better without him, he's garbage. He's a waste of a pick. Shut up.
No, he's not a waste of a pick. He's not garbage. They were playing better without him than with him. And the reason for that is because he's 19 years old. The point you just mentioned. And the like the trajectory of this organization isn't to win a ton of games with Eric Gordon, who you're hoping to trade at the deadline, with Christian Wood, who's in the final year of his contract next year, which a lot of people are hoping that you trade him by the deadline. The future of this Rockets organization presently is Jalen Green, and rightfully so. Now, does he have some things he needs to work on? Yes, every 19-year-old does. I don't think he's ever going to be a great shooter. I think he can turn into a good three-point shooter. One of the reasons is going to be depending on how hard he's willing to work on it. The second part of that, which I was encouraged with what I saw yesterday, he's just not taking the bad shots. Like, don't try to cross some dude up, take step-back threes. You're going to increase your shooting percentage if you don't take those shots, which is something that I, like you mentioned, Steven Silas said after the game, he didn't do much of that. It was more catch and shoot. Jalen Green's going to be a good offensive player in this league whenever he has better shot selection. Whenever he works on his game, but I do love him going downhill. Like, I love him attacking the basket. He needs to get a little better finishing at the rim, which, again, 19 years old, grows into his body. He'll be able to do that. I still see tons of upside with Jalen Green. He's still got a ways to go.
And look, he's not 19 years old. Of course he's got a ways
and
to go.
And that's fair. Yeah, it's not a
hot take. Many guys come into the league built like LeBron.
Right.
And, all right, I've got a 27-year-old body, but I'm 19, and I've got that kind of energy. Most guys at 19, they have to work their way into, their a fully grown adult body. You guys are 6'3", 6'4", 6'6", and they're 180 pounds. Well, in 4 years, he's going to be 220.
Yep.
And he's going to be a lot stronger. And people are going to be able to push him around when he takes a shot. He's going to be able to body his way through the lane instead of, get bounced around and miss those layups. Now he's going in and he's throwing it down. So I think Jalen Green is going to be a kid who can absolutely fill it up. I think defensively, if he's middle of the pack, that might be what you get from him.
So what?
But if he can fill it up for you on a night and be that, relatively high percentage shooter, we've seen him in the G League, we saw him in the preseason, knock down clutch contested shots. So it's there.
Yeah.
They got to unlock it, but it's there.
Whenever I say he's not going to be a good shooter, doesn't mean I don't think he's going to be a really good scorer. There's a difference between the two. Like, LeBron James is not a good shooter, but he takes good shots, and he's somebody who's improved greatly in that facet of the game. I still believe Jalen Green's going to be a high-level scorer in the NBA. I do think at this point Kevin Porter Jr. is pretty much, like, he's going to come back in a few days as well. I think he's to the point where you don't think, like, he's going to be a star. I don't think you look at him as, like, the bee to Jalen Green, like, hit the Robin to Jalen Green's Batman. And you start to look ahead of the draft a little bit. I think a point guard would be great with this team, especially with Jalen Green playing off the ball. I would move Kevin Porter Jr. off the ball as well. This upcoming draft is not a great draft in terms of point guards. Most of them are like stretch fours. If it's Jabari Smith, Banchero from Duke, you have Chet Holmgren, which I'm not sold on, from Gonzaga as well. You don't really see a lot of guards there. You're looking at another big that you would be picking if you do have a top three pick. I wonder where you stand on the idea of looking to trade Christian Wood before the NBA trade deadline.
Bye.
Yeah.
The Rockets are still in acquire draft pick mode. And when you get into next year and then you don't have your first round pick, so getting those picks this year is important. When you get to next year, now you've got to start paying the toll to the Oklahoma City Thunder in your deal for Russell Westbrook, and now you've got to start paying that toll. This year, if you can get some more draft picks, I mean, look what they did with four draft picks. They have four 19-year-old kids, and every one of them looks like at some point they will at least be a rotational player.
They'll
at least be a bench guy who serves a purpose.
Yeah. Garuba's got some work.
But, again, he's 19 years old.
I would have taken Grimes over Christopher, but that's because I'm biased.
And these are guys, look, Christopher's played really well.
He has.
And Şengün has shown you a lot of glimpses of what he can be. And their offense looks really good when they run it through him, and he's passing the ball, whether it's out of the high post, whether it's off the wing. He does a real nice job of facilitating that offense. So as he fills into his body, that's another guy who becomes a big weapon for them that they got. And I know they traded to get that pick. But they had four picks. If you can get a first-round pick for Eric Gordon, you can get a first-round pick, maybe more for Christian
Probably
Wood.
A late first for Gordon, right? Like a playoff contender.
Yeah,
you're picking
but that's
in the 20s.
Okay.
I would do it in a heartbeat.
That's okay.
Absolutely.
You can find guys late in the first round who are contributors.
The Knicks might be an option there, too, because the Knicks should be looking for some perimeter play, which, by the way, Kemba Walker, like, he's been benched for, with Tibbs
like
in New York, and he scored, what, 40-something last
44.
Night?
44.
What was that? What
I
was
know, because the rest of the team couldn't score, but Kemba Walker lighting it up. I guess his knee's feeling better.
Yeah, man, that was incredible. It gives me hope for John Wall. Just kidding. It doesn't give me any sort of
no
hope for John
whatsoever.
Wall at all. I haven't watched a ton of bowl games this year. UCF beating Florida yesterday, which was something that the folks in Florida loved to see. An American Conference school beating the overrated SEC.
Yeah, does the SEC team in that, like, no-name bowl, does the SEC team give like a flying rat's tail that game?
They were throwing punches after the game, so they had some fire. They had some desire.
Being a jerk and caring about playing football, two totally different things.
I love that excuse. Anytime the SEC loses, oh, the SEC doesn't care. The SEC doesn't care when they
lose a game.
No, I
don't think it matters whether it's the SEC or the Big Ten. I think when you get a Power 5 team that had a very disappointing season and like, okay, coach, you're out of here, that team and you're playing in a nondescript, nobody-cares bowl, yeah, that team is not showing up.
I don't know if anybody cares all that much about playing in bowl games outside of the college football playoff and, like, the New Year's Six games. The
Memphis
Hawaii.
Should've.
What's that?
Memphis sure did.
You think they cared about playing in it?
I think they cared about going to Hawaii.
Well, they were already there. The
I know, but I'm saying,
to
like, that's
tomorrow.
That's the whole thing, right? You get to go to Hawaii.
But
that's like a lifetime vacation. I get to go to Hawaii. And they didn't even have to play football. They just got to go to Hawaii.
Yeah, that's my stance, too, is like the fact that they canceled the game, like, who cares? You're out in Hawaii for a week.
Now I can do more stuff.
Yeah, like, they don't have to soak up the 6 hours where they would have been playing today on football. They probably get to enjoy another day and then hit the charter tonight and fly back home to spend some time with their loved ones on Christmas. But my stance with bowls, like, I told you this yesterday. Like, I love the college football playoff. I can't wait till they expand and you get a real playoff in college football. I love the tradition of the New Year's Six games. All of these lesser bowls, not a ton of interest. And maybe from the players and the coaches as well. They're already looking ahead to the recruiting classes. They're looking ahead to next year. I don't know how much effort you actually get in these bowl games.
Well, would you rather watch a nondescript bowl game or whatever cheesy, sappy movie is on the Hallmark Channel?
Bowl game. Bowl game.
That's why we have bowl games.
Yeah.
Do you want to wager or do you not want to not wager?
I want to wager.
I need a bowl game for that.
Yeah. You talked me into it.
You know, what are we missing today?
We're missing the Hawaii Bowl.
We're missing sports, period, the end.
Yeah, people are looking for things to bet on. Maybe bet the ponies. 713-780-ESPN. Bet on Munster Trucks. I don't think that's something you can do. 713-780-377. We can probably do it within the confines of Nick's place, though. I think you said there's a hat over there. Let's throw a couple bucks in there, and I just knocked this down. I hope it doesn't screw us up. All right, coming up next, we'll go around the NFL. Big games this weekend around the league and the playoff implications involved. We do it next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Live from Nick's place for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Welcome back. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Time to go around the NFL. Patrick Creighton filling in for Joel Blank, giving away some Earl Campbell, Warren Moon jerseys here, different competitions. Swing on by to Nick's Place, 2713 Rocky Ridge. We'll be here as a station all the way until 7 o'clock tonight. Let's go around the NFL. Some big games around the league this weekend. Couple of Saturday games. Tomorrow, Arizona, home for the Colts. Cardinals 10-4, Colts 8-6. The Cards looking to clinch their first playoff spot since 2015. The Cardinals in this game are one-point favorites. I like Arizona in this one, PC. I know they've lost back-to-back games. I know the Colts have looked good. Arizona at home. I feel like they're the more desperate team trying to get back into the win column. I have Cardinals minus one in this one.
You know, I love the Cardinals this year. I like before the season, I like Kyler Murray as my MVP candidate.
Yeah.
And Kyler Murray's giving you a hell of a season. What I'm concerned about is their offense never looks right without DeAndre Hopkins. Hmm. And D-Hop now being out for the season. Last week, their offense was a disaster. And I'm concerned about you know, what are, you know, James Conner's been banged up a little bit now, and D-Hop's out of the lineup. A.J. Green, he's had some moments. He's also had the ultimate brain-dead moment in an end zone that cost him a game.
Yeah.
So I'm concerned about Arizona and how efficient their offense is. I'm also concerned about them stopping the run. They got beat up in the run game last week. Indy is going to pound the ball down their throats. Indy's really hot right now. I think I like the Colts.
Yeah, I think that's the popular pick on that play. I feel like the NFL, though, you always feel like you have a good idea of how things are going. You have Arizona, a team that's struggling versus a team that's on the way up. And then every week in the NFL, boom, goes the other way. The other Saturday game, Green Bay, home for the Browns. Packers 11-3. They have visions of being the top spot in the NFC, and that might matter for them more than anybody else. We know about the frozen tundra, and we also know the Packers are undefeated at home this season. They've also scored 30 points in four straight games. The Browns, not playing great football. Baker Mayfield, there's talks of Baker. Oh, is he going to be a Cleveland Brown next season? They're currently in last place in the AFC North, too, by the way, but only one game back in the league. I look at the number there, 7.5's a lot of points, but I'm actually laying the points and taking the Packers at home at Lambeau.
I don't see how you could ever take the Browns in a big spot. especially with, I mean, look, Baker has had a lousy season. I know a lot of it has to do with injury. I mean, he's been playing with a torn labrum in the shoulder since week two. And then he's had a handful of other injuries as well. Their backfield has been beat up. Sometimes they don't have Nick Chubb. Sometimes they don't have Kareem Hunt. Sometimes they don't have both. They're going to have Chubb, but they might not have Kareem Hunt. They are an enigma of a team. And, yeah, I'm not going to trust them going on the road to Green Bay. Look, Green Bay should have won last week by 14, and they had this giant brain fart in the last 5 minutes of the game and let the Ravens damn near steal it. I don't think they're going to make that mistake again. I think they're going to win this one handily.
Sunday Night Football is in the Big D as the Cowboys are home for the Washington football team. The Cowboys are beaten up on the rest of the NFC East, undefeated against the rest of the division, 4-0. The Cowboys giving up 10.5 points. That Washington football team's feisty. Ron Rivera always has that team fighting. They're getting Heinicke back off of the COVID list. Look, I don't think the football team's going to win the game. I think they covered the 10.5 spread, though.
So the football team got a little four-game winning streak. And I was starting to think, all right, we're starting to see that football team from last year. The guys who fight, the guys who grind, they're in it at the end. And what happened? I had a 9-team parlay.
You had a 9-team parlay?
And the only team that didn't cover was the football team. They missed it by one. Fortunately, I had them in a teaser in that day. But last week against the Eagles, whose offense has been very Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts was tremendous in that game.
The football team let me down again. So the football team has burned me 2 weeks in a row. Screw you, football team. I'm betting against you no matter what.
All right, we're on different sides of that. How about Amari Cooper, by the way, complaining a bit about not getting the football as much? CeeDee Lamb, their top guy. Tony Pollard's coming along is pretty well after missing a game a couple of weeks ago with that foot injury. Ezekiel Elliott, well, looks like he's on the downside of his career, but he's still going to get him the touches. Amari Cooper starting to make a little bit noise of not getting enough touches there in Dallas.
So what if he was Michael Gallup?
Yeah,
does anybody remember him? Because he had 1,000 yards 2 years ago, and now he's like the forgotten man.
He still had a good solid year. He's been hurt for a good chunk of it, though.
Zeke, I'll tell you what, Zeke looks like he's banged up. He doesn't look right. That line is just not as good as it's been. But I still think Dallas is winning that game by double digits.
Every Dallas Cowboy fan is always so loud about Ezekiel Elliott being fine. Like, he's not fine, right? Like, his knee looks terrible. He's averaging less than 3 yards per carry. Like, he's not fine, right?
No, he don't look right.
You can still like the Cowboys. You can like the offense could start clicking. Dak Prescott could start looking good. The defense is better in Dallas than it's ever been in a long, long time.
Bounce back candidate for next year.
It's okay to have those thoughts, but Ezekiel Elliott's not fine.
No. He's definitely looks like he's banged up.
Yeah, he does not look fine at all. So I always say that Tony Pollard should get the bulk of the carries
there. The lion's share.
Then Cowboy fans push back with me on that too, saying that he's not an every down back. Tony Pollard, every down back? What do you think? Is Tony Pollard an every down back? Should he get more touches than Ezekiel Elliott?
I think whoever
don't
is.
Don't want him to.
whoever's playing the best should get the carries, right? Like that's a simple concept?
Yeah, it seems like a simple concept. Kansas City at Arrowhead, winners of seven in a row. They take on the Steelers. The Steelers with Big Ben somehow above 500 on the year. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it. 7-6-1, Chiefs at 10-4, won 10 in a row. The Chiefs are 8.5-point favorites in this game, PC. This is one I stayed away from because of all the COVID stuff going on. If you can find 8.5, there is a decent chance that Tyreek Hill does not play in this game. There's a decent chance that Travis Kelce does not play in this game. There's a decent chance that Chris Jones does not play in this game. If all three of those dudes are out and the Steelers are getting 8.5 points, I know they're heading into Arrowhead. That's a lot of points for a team that's without three of their best players.
No, and what we've seen this year from Patrick Mahomes is that he has very little confidence in receivers not named Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. And for good reason. Those guys have been dropping balls this year like crazy.
Uh-huh.
If they don't have Hill or Kelce, I don't think it's any way possible they cover 8.5 unless Ben just throws four picks.
I was thinking about the offensive production. If those two dudes miss, like trying to find a value play like in fantasy or daily fantasy, who's going to get the bulk of the touches if those two guys are out? Because Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, they get like 95% of the touches whenever Pat Mahomes is throwing the ball. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is back. I wonder if they utilize him in the passing game a little bit. Mecole Hardman has been a disappointment from where they drafted him.
Yeah,
Robinson, Pringle, just a couple of guys. I did notice they got Blake Bell back from the COVID list, but still not somebody you would think that would go off. Like Mahomes, in terms of targets, who's he going to throw the football to?
It will not be pretty if they don't have Hill or Kelce.
Yeah, it'll be ugly. Do you think Kansas City's the favorite in the AFC like I do? Like I look at the AFC, and I know the Chiefs have been a disappointment to start the season. I feel like they're playing better football now and doing it on the back of their defense. The offense, I don't think, has quite hit their potential. I don't see anybody in the AFC really competing with Kansas City in the postseason.
I wouldn't say they can't compete. I don't think Kansas City's as good as they've been, but right now, how can you say that there's a team that you would rather have?
Sure.
If you were going to put Kansas City against the Chargers, neutral field, no line, just, hey, you're going to take Kansas City.
Absolutely.
You're going to take Kansas City against Titans. You're going to take Kansas City against Ravens. You're going to take Kansas City against Steelers.
Buffalo,
you're going to take
Patriots.
Kansas City against Cincinnati. You're going to take them against Buffalo. You're going to take them against the Patriots. Now, you might take the Patriots against almost anybody else, but right now, you're not going to go against Patrick Mahomes in the AFC unless you're getting a boatload of points. So we're just talking straight heads up.
I'm talking about AFC favorite.
I want Patrick Mahomes.
Who's the best contender to Kansas City in the AFC? Because after that, it's bunched up. Tennessee has 10 wins. They have as many wins as Kansas City. You have Mike Vrabel saying that they were planning their funeral, and that everybody was putting them like to bed, that they were on their deathbed. Yet they had the most wins in the AFC tied with Kansas City. Who are you giving the best chance to knock off Kansas City in the AFC playoffs?
Well, I'll tell you what, right now, if you said Titans, Colts, neutral field, you got the Titans?
I picked the Colts to win that game.
I picked the Colts to win that game, too.
Even though Zach Cunningham's just roaming the defensive backfield for the Titans, now, playing at an elite level for the Tennessee Titans and Mike Vrabel.
Now, you know what? Healthy Derrick Henry, my choice is different. But we don't have a healthy Derrick Henry. And what the hell is wrong with Julio Jones?
Yeah, he's done. AJ Brown.
Looks absolutely just done.
Hurt, old. I mean, guys, once they get to 30 in the NFL, I mean, what can you really expect for a dude? Like, they
Julio
don't really
Jones
last.
Looks like he has just been beaten down, and now the wheels have all come off. And that was their big move. That was their push them over the top move, and he's falling apart. Derrick Henry's hurt. I'm not putting my faith in Ryan Tannehill.
What is interesting about Tennessee, they win that game yesterday. They're magic number one to win the AFC South. A.J. Brown looked fantastic yesterday.
Sure did.
And thoughts that Derrick Henry would be back in Week 18, and if not Week 18, then the postseason. That's a huge boost that nobody else in the league would get. So maybe Tennessee is that team that is the best contender against Kansas City. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. A new team interested in getting involved in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes. Who it is, how likely it is, next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Christmas, 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 Christmas.
Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays from ESPN 97.5. You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Nick's Place. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Patrick Creighton filling in for Joel Blank. We're out at Nick's Place for our listener Christmas party. We're currently playing the two beers, one foot challenge. You have to chug two beers while all 1 foot. If you come down to a second foot, you get penalized 5 seconds before you can continue drinking
touching
the beer. Mark was our first contestant. He's from Dallas, so he didn't do very well. A minute and 4 seconds. He's a Cowboys fan. He's not from Dallas. He didn't do well, though. That's true. Tyler Scott, our assistant PD, he went at a 35.67 clip, which
didn't touch the ground, Jeremy, which, by the way, I want to let you know that.
Which makes me wonder a little bit about what you do on the side. Matt's going currently.
Like I told you, I'm a former high school athlete.
Yeah, I am too, and I wouldn't do it as quickly as you. What was Matt's time? What did
48.
Matt do? Matt did. That's not bad. Matt 48.65. So Tyler is our current leader. We'll see if anybody else can do it. So the winner of this PC is getting the Earl Campbell Columbia Blue or the Warren Moon Purple People Eater.
Yes, they get their choice.
Oh, they get their choice.
They get their choice.
Well, that's an obvious choice. I mean, is there anybody inside of Nick's Place that'd be picking a Warren Moon Viking jersey over an Earl Campbell Columbia Blue?
Depends. You already have an Earl Campbell Columbia Blue.
Big C raised his hand.
Big C.
You got to justify that. I'm judging right
He's
now.
A Saints
Warren
fan.
Moon over Earl Campbell. They're both Hall of Famers. I did love Warren Moon. Warren Moon threw a pretty ball too. Best spiral you'd ever see. You know, Warren Moon would bite, like, not, he wouldn't bite him, but he would have finger clippers on the bench, and he had to have them at a perfect length, and he felt he had to have them at the perfect length to throw the perfect spiral that he did.
Whatever works for you, man. Some of these guys have crazy, like, they got, like, crazy superstitions of what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So if that's what worked for him, that's what worked for him.
All right, there might be a new team involved in the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes, if you want to call it that. Albert Breer, who contributes to Sports Illustrated, he joined the Bull and Fox, which is a station in Cleveland, and had some thoughts on a new team that could be interested in Deshaun Watson.
I think if and when Deshaun comes available, and I think we all assume that the Texans are probably going to get him out there on the market. You know, the same sort of way, like the Lions got Stafford out on the market pretty quickly last year. And, you know, obviously all of this is pending the legal stuff. You know, I'd expect the Browns to be a player. Like, I think the Browns are going to throw their hat in. Now, are they going to be willing to go the distance? I don't know that. But I absolutely believe Browns are going to be a player for Deshaun Watson if and while he becomes available.
Albert Breer thinks that the Cleveland Browns will be a player for Deshaun Watson. Couple things there. Baker Mayfield, do you want to pay him $40 million per year? He's about to enter the fifth year of that rookie contract. Also, are the Browns a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender? I think it's a fair question. I think if they had a Deshaun Watson, and we'll get to the legal side of it in just a second, but Deshaun Watson goes to Cleveland, they're a contender, right?
If Deshaun Watson, and we're let's for right now,
yeah, we'll get
let's
to that
take
in a second.
The legal stuff out.
Yeah.
If they had a quarterback as good as Deshaun Watson, they are a Super Bowl contender. And I'd say they've got 10, 11 wins right now with that kind of quarterback.
7-7 right now with a Baker Mayfield who's been playing with a torn labrum, and it's Baker Mayfield who, you know, I don't know where you stand on him. I don't think he's top 10 quarterback in the NFL. And, you know, they've had some problems there as well. They have a really good backfield. The receiving core, iffy.
Jarvis Landry's a good receiver.
He's a good receiver. He's not a great receiver. Like, is he a true WR1? Not sure. Like, he's a perfect number two. It's why the Odell Beckham Jarvis Landry tandem seemed great on paper, just didn't work out. I love Jarvis Landry. I don't think he's a top tier receiver, though.
He's worked for Baker Mayfield because of what Baker's strong at throwing.
Right.
And that's not the real deep passes, and it's the shorter things that Baker's better at throwing, and that fits what, you know, Jarvis Landry's skill set.
You know who's a good compliment to Jarvis Landry? This isn't going to be a popular opinion, and it, you know, you have to have health. Will Fuller. I mean, Will Fuller can take the top off of a defense, and you have Jarvis Landry underneath. Now, that, you know, the Will Fuller health is something that's a huge factor, but I feel like that would be a pretty good tandem as well.
You need to have a quarterback who can make that throw.
Right, and kind of assuming that Deshaun Watson would be that guy. You, yeah, know, you have to have somebody that can throw the deep ball for sure, which is why Fuller to Miami really never made a whole lot of sense unless they had visions of trading for Deshaun, even when they signed Will Fuller, because Tua was never going to be a guy who could make that deep throw and throw the ball downfield like Will Fuller, you bring him in to do. Now, Pro Football Talk recently reported that the criminal investigation regarding Deshaun Watson is expected to be resolved by late January. What are your thoughts on that?
All right, so from everything I've heard from, you know, various legal peoples, is that they are talking about the grand jury. The grand jury, which you couple, was it a week or so ago, about how they had sent out subpoenas in October, and they'd been collecting information on Deshaun, on his social media accounts, on his Instagram, on his Cash App.
Which is a terrible app, by the way.
And they were able to take that information and match up the dates. They were able to match up the dates to what the women's accusations are to line up the things for, okay, you said it happened on this day. I've got Instagram messages on this day. I've got Cash App on this day. Everything pulls in line. It creates credibility for that woman. So the next step is going to be subpoenas for actual people. And when they get to that point, what they're expecting is those subpoenas where they'll actually call in people to testify, that's going to be in January.
The legal people I've talked to, and I'm not dispelling at all what you've said, is that, one, when you look at the subpoenas and the warrants and that stuff that Channel 13 ABC here locally broke, is that it's very important to realize that it's indecent assault and not sexual assault. The difference there is felony versus misdemeanor. And look, make of that what you will. These were just a couple of warrants. Maybe there's more to that as well. Also, from legal people I've talked to, they feel like there's a pretty good chance that this never gets to a criminal case and that it's settled before late January.
See, I've gotten the opposite, yep, which is you've got 10 different women who don't know each other, who are all accusing the same guy of the same thing, that a grand jury is not going to deny them their day in court. It doesn't mean, like, a grand jury is not deciding guilt or innocence. It's just deciding, is there enough to go to court?
Sure.
Now, for a grand jury, the defense is never going to say a word. Only the prosecution presents. The defense just sits there, and the grand jury says, okay, you showed us enough, or you didn't. I find it very hard to believe they're going to tell all 10 non-related women, no, you don't get a day in court. Now it's on you. Go prove your case. Now, would Deshaun settle in the meantime? Would they accept a settlement? I think whether or not there is a, you know, if they get, obviously, if there is a case that gets forward and he gets indicted, then I think settlement is on the table. Obviously, if he doesn't get indicted, there's no need for settlement.
Right, yeah. I've heard, too, that if Deshaun settles this before any sort of judgment on the grand jury, that a good attorney, and Deshaun Watson has one, would never let it get to a criminal point because it is settled civilly. I think what Deshaun Watson did is terrible. I think it's difficult to prove in a criminal case. Now, and what you're saying is that, you know, it's not a rule. It's not a judgment. It's just, do they have their day in court? And, look, we're on very different sides of it, and I really don't know anything about the legal system. It's just a wait-and-see type of thing. I think the real only conversation you can have about it currently is like, okay, well, what's the trade value for Deshaun? What can you get back for Deshaun? And I think we would both agree that that changes drastically depending on whatever happens legally. Like, the legal variable of it is probably the most important variable of it, and whatever happens before draft day is going to be a huge swing on if Deshaun Watson gets traded or not. Back to the Cleveland involvement in terms of Deshaun Watson, do they have enough? Like, let's take the criminal stuff and the civil stuff out of this, the legal stuff. Like, Deshaun Watson's, or the Browns are going to be drafting, if they make the playoffs, they're going to have one of the worst 14 picks of the draft. They only have a first rounder next year, the year after that. Like, does Cleveland even have enough to trade for Deshaun Watson?
Maybe they don't. Yeah, I mean, what is the value that they're going to get for Deshaun? I think that's still a very big question, depending on, you know, obviously the two various legal entities. Is he going to be, because if he gets indicted by a grand jury, he's going to go right on the commissioner's exempt list, and then there's no trade period at the end. If he doesn't get indicted,
not the end, next year, because
right,
he would get traded.
We're only
eventually
talking about this offseason. Right. We're only talking about this offseason. So if he gets put on the exempt list, there's no deal. That's it. If he gets indicted and then settles. You got to deal with the civil stuff, which won't necessarily get you on the exempt list. But if you got indicted and then you settled, you have to deal with Roger Goodell. There is going to be a reckoning with Roger Goodell at some point.
How many days? How many games do you think?
Well, there's no precedent for this. The most that we've seen with this is two women. And they weren't at the same time. Kareem Hunt had, you know, two separate instances. We've never seen 24 women in one time. In their criminal case, it's 10 women at one time. If he settles the criminal case, Lisa Friel, who's the NFL special counsel, she made her teeth in the Manhattan DA's office in sex crimes. She was the one who pushed to have the big penalty on Ezekiel Elliott, even when they found out he didn't actually do anything, it was all made up, and the woman who accused him confessed that it was made up. Lisa Friel hit him with six games anyway to send a message. Well, what kind of message is the NFL going to send with Deshaun Watson? I think a year is fair to be on the table when we're talking about what could the NFL be proposing to Deshaun Watson. Does that mean that's what it'll be? Will there be a negotiation? But I think the NFL is probably going to come with at least a year suspension on Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. To me, much less than that. Like, I'm looking at like four or six games, and I wonder if you...
Well, it can't be four games because
if it never hits the criminal case, it can.
No, it can't. This is the new, that's their new policy is DV, six games. Bam, that's it.
What did you say? DV?
Domestic violence.
Right, but if that's not a criminal thing, that's not domestic violence.
Ezekiel Elliott wasn't a criminal thing.
And this wasn't sexual assault, it was indecent assault.
Not to Roger Goodell. Remember, the legal system and Roger Goodell's system, they are not the same. He has, and this has been determined in court, he has broad powers to do whatever the heck he wants. If I say that your footballs are deflated and science says they're not, it doesn't matter. If I say you committed domestic violence and sexual assault, even if your witness recants and admits that she lied, it doesn't matter. Roger Goodell can do whatever he wants. So if we're talking about, oh, well, the criminal case has no bearing on what Roger Goodell can do. He can say, yeah, we think you did, therefore, here's your year. In fact, you're suspended indefinitely. In a year, you can apply for reinstatement, and we'll see where you're at then. There is no precedent for this, and I think the NFL is going to swing for the fences.
I'll take the under on a steak dinner. He doesn't get a year.
Bill? Well, just because it's a steak dinner with you, sure.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's get to some more of our Christmas wish list items in the city of Houston. We have a couple in-house here at Nick's Place. I have a couple. Tyler has a couple as well. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Road Show. Live from Nick's Place, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brennan.
Out at Nick's Place for our listener Christmas party, I'm getting some good trade rumors from inside sources that I don't know the name of, so it makes things easy. Listener Christmas party at Nick's Place, 2713 Rocky Ridge. We'll be here until 7 o'clock. Patrick Creighton, Santa Creighton, brought in an Earl Campbell autographed helmet. We're giving this away a little bit later with a wings challenge. You got to get here soon, though. Also, we're playing the two beers, one foot contest, and we have a new leader in the clubhouse, intern Noah, who has cemented his legacy at ESPN 97.5
I've been bested.
By surpassing Tyler Scott's 35.67 for intern Noah, who did it in 33 seconds.
You know, these new guys, they're
you know what?
They're stronger. They're faster.
We should have put more at stake. If he beat you, you should have given him your job. He should have your job now.
Well, you know what? He can have my job as long as I get to keep the paychecks. That's
fine. Intern Noah saying he doesn't want Tyler's job.
He doesn't want it.
Whose job do you want?
Yo, Tyler does work, man. Tyler does work.
No, Tyler works very hard.
Not only does Tyler do work, but every time anybody has a question, they call Tyler.
Yeah.
And whether the question makes sense or not, we call Tyler. Anytime something goes wrong, we call Tyler. Tyler didn't make it go wrong, but Tyler's going to take all our phone calls. At early in the morning, late at night, on the weekends. Yeah, no.
Why do
give
you call
Tyler
him?
Some due, man. Give Tyler some due.
Why do you call him early and late? Give the guy
when wake you're up working is when
bit.
You're working.
He does do a lot of crap, I think is the best way to put it, right? We asked earlier your Christmas wish list, your Houston sports Christmas wish list. Matt, who's here at Nick's Place, he came up to me and said, hey, Samson is the head coach of the University of Houston basketball program for a long, long time. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean Kelvin. Doesn't necessarily mean Kellen, but I think you have a couple of options there. And the way that they're playing and the way they've been a top 25 team perennially for the last several years, Final Four team last year, currently ranked number 13 in the country, I think it's a pretty good Christmas wish list.
You know what? We were talking about this yesterday.
Yeah.
About what Kelvin Sampson has meant to that program. And, like, you would know better than anybody. You only call all their games. But a program that was kind of floundering and teetering around.
It was dead. I mean, it really was.
And like, as you said, empty building, no fans in the building when they play, now are a perennially ranked team, new arena, filled to the max. They're going to the Sweet 16. They're going to the Final Four. They might be the best basketball team in the city, including the Rockets. So, you know what? What he has meant to that program. Kellen Sampson should have free reign. You are the coach for as long as you want to be the coach. When you decide you don't want to be the coach, if you want your son to coach, he coaches. We're good. Here you go.
That's the agreement. That's what's going to happen. And
it's almost like a life estate, right?
Yeah. It's the Sampson legacy. He is a huge part of the game plan. He's very much involved in the scouts. You can relate it a little bit to secession, right? Like, can't you make that comparison a little bit? You can make that a little bit, the Sampson secession there at the University of Houston. See, Matt stole a little bit of my thunder there. I want a national championship in one of the major sports at the University of Houston. That would be on my Christmas wish list.
So, for you, would you want that as a basketball or baseball championship since you are the voice of the Houston Cougars when it comes to basketball and baseball?
I said a national championship and a major sport. I left it at that, PC. Stop trying to put words in my mouth. Tyler, what's your Houston sports wish list?
I'm just going to go another World Series because we missed out on the last one.
Tyler's wish list is that he can beat intern Noah in the 2 beers, 1 foot contest.
Is that when that you set me up?
I didn't set you up.
Son of a bitch.
He just played you.
It came to me.
He played me.
See, I think
turn his mic off.
I think that's the easy one, right? I think the easy one is to win a championship for whoever your favorite Houston sports team. It's what I just said. I said national championship for U of H. He said World Series title for the Houston Astros. I kind of like your train of thought where, like, okay, if you only get the one, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to be good for a long time in any other. Like, if you sell your soul to the devil for next season and then you're terrible for, like, the next 9 years, that'd be a bitter pill to swallow, be where the Houston Texans are at, right? So I like yours where it kind of positions yourself to have a long, extended window. I don't necessarily agree with your Carlos Correa one because we're on two different sides of that. But I like where your mind is with that one. Do you have a couple others?
Well, you know how you ever seen the movie Bedazzled?
Yeah, it's been a while, though.
So, you know, when Brendan Fraser, he says, I want to be, like, the biggest, strongest, fastest basketball player, and they're interviewing him post-game, the sweat's just flowing off him. He's like, well, we play good, and we work good, and we do good. Like, he's a complete bumbling fool, and then he, you know, looks at his shorts, and he has a total panic attack. If you sell out for one title, what you get other than that might be really horrible.
Yeah,
I don't want to win one title and then fall apart for a decade. I want to have a chance to win every year. When you get to the postseason, injuries, teams are hot, teams are cold. You never know what's going to happen. Like, I want to have my best shot every single year.
You know what's interesting about that too is, like, yours was to sign Carlos Correa to the blank check 10-year deal. Like, I feel like the Astros still have a really good chance to win the World Series even without Carlos Correa. Like, I don't feel like they're going anywhere. They still have a really strong foundation. They still have a great offense. They still have a good young pitching staff, and they brought back what they're hoping could be an ace in the postseason to Justin Verlander. Does it lessen their odds to win it next year? Yeah. But also on the back end of that, it might increase their odds to win one like in year 7 through 10 of that contract.
Well, here is Merry Christmas, John.
The legend John Granato is out of here. I tell everybody I want to be Granato when I grow up.
Here's my issue if you don't sign Correa, right? Because, look, I've already been on record that the Astros are out on Correa. I've heard the Astros are out on Correa and that they are going to be very in on Trevor Story.
I'm very out on that idea.
Now, if let's say they don't get Correa and then they don't get Story.
That would be great if they don't get Story.
You still have a really, you know, a really good 1-6. But the Astros' recent history is a lot of those guys are going to hit the IL for a month or so. And if that happens, your lineup gets real short real fast. You know, you're not going to be able to survive if Alex Bregman misses 2 months because of another leg injury. You're not if Aledmys Diaz is your number one guy off the bench and he takes another pitch off the hand and breaks his hand and he's out 2 months, well,
now that's two guys out.
It's going to get real thin real quick. Yuli is going to be, 38?
Yeah.
How long do we expect Yuli is going to be the picture of health?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I think every Major League Baseball team has those questions. Now, the Astros might not have the insurance policy that they did in years past.
Michael Brantley is who missed a bunch of time last year and played through injury. He's now going to be, 35?
Right, but if you let – I mean, if Correa leaves and you're thinking that he's going to leave and you've had people tell you that, I believe he's going to leave too just because I don't believe the Astros are going to give him the money that he wants. I don't believe Crane's going to want to go over the luxury tax threshold, so I believe he's going to be gone too. But that doesn't mean that the Astros aren't going to make collateral moves off of that to try to improve said depth.
Well, Jim Crane has said he wants to make a big splash at the shortstop position. Well, there's only two splashes.
See, I don't think Trevor Story is a splash. Do you like Trevor Story as a player?
I think Trevor Story is a good player. I don't think he's as good as Carlos Correa, but
not even close.
As compared to the other options that were available, Trevor Story is a very good defensive player. He doesn't have the arm that Correa has, a little bit more range, but doesn't have the arm.
No.
And
he's terrible away from Coors Field.
Yeah, and you can make that argument for anybody that ever plays there, and then they leave, and, look, they hit just fine.
Do they? That's not the case.
Yeah, it's the case a lot more often than not.
Give me two examples.
Larry Walker.
Larry Walker was a Hall of Famer. DJ LeMahieu doesn't hit for power. It's not the same type.
Doesn't
DJ LeMahieu's power did not go away.
He led the league in hitting.
Exactly. It's different whenever you're a contact hitter that leaves Coors Field.
So you're telling me that Trevor Story, with the short porch in left field, is now going to lose power.
He hits 240 lifetime away from Coors Field. I do not want to spend $25 to $30 million on a 240 hitter away from Colorado.
Yeah, he wouldn't hit 240 just because when you play in a stadium like this.
To pay him $25 to $30 million, what does he have to hit?
Well, that's the thing. The whole idea of Trevor Story is that Trevor Story wouldn't command $30 million.
They're saying he's going to get
The people that I've spoken to have talked about 5 to 6 years and like 150 to 180.
That's $30 million.
If he gets all the way up to 180, 150, and you're 25.
Not for 5 years. 150 for five is 30.
Maybe my math is off.
Yeah.
But
you got the Asman math. It's the New York math, you guys.
If you're $30 million versus, you know, Correa getting 35 and the other guy's getting 35, and you're at 28 to 30 and you're on a shorter-term deal, that might be what works for them. And they offered Correa 5 and 160, which they knew was never going to cut it.
And it was before Verlander.
Is 5 and 125 going to get you?
Well, the Verlander contract, I feel like, is not used in the equation enough because now that they've signed Verlander to the $25 million AAV, now the salary for the Astros is $20 to $24 million away from what I think is going to be the 210 luxury tax threshold. So if you're 20 to 24 million away, you sign Trevor Story for 25 to 30 million per year, now you surpass that. And if we don't think Crane's doing that, there's like the other argument against Trevor Story, even before we talk about what he does away from Coors Field.
Well, now you get into a different argument, which is...
it is different.
Is Jim Crane finally going to say winning is more important than the luxury tax? Because if you build the team from scratch, you're not paying luxury tax. When you try to hold the team together and then continue to keep your run moving, at some point young players become veterans, and you're either going to pay them or you're going to start over from scratch. Do you want to start over? Are you going to play the we're a mid-market, small-market team nonsense when you're in market 8? Are you going to play that?
How would they
or are you
be
going to pay
market,
people?
Though? Like if you're spending $210 million, that's not mid-market. That's going to be a top 5 payroll in baseball.
Probably top 6, but yeah.
That's not mid-market.
If you want to keep your team together, and the big boys are paying at 230 and 250, you can't be afraid of 210. It's not like the Astros haven't been printing money for 6 years. You know, that they don't generate the money. Of course they do. And, oh, well, you only pay on the amount of tax you go over.
Right.
So if you are $10 million over the luxury tax, your tax is $2 million.
Yeah, 20% first year.
If you're $20 million over, your tax is $4 million. Are you telling me $4 million isn't worth the World Series?
That's like, it's an interesting conversation because you're telling a dude to give away $4 million. Like, think about that for a second. Like, I want you to give me $45,000. Like, that'd be significant to you. $4 million is significant to anybody, even a multi-millionaire. Andrew's yelling at us. We can continue this on the other side. Also, whenever we come back, Randy Mueller, longtime NFL executive, he had some thoughts about Nick Caserio being on the headsets. We do it next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Oh, Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays from ESPN 97.5.